Chapter 26. The Seven Factors of Awakening. The seven factors of awakening, Sapta Bodhyanga, are mindfulness, investigation of phenomena, diligence, joy, ease, concentration, and letting go. Bodhyanga is made up of two words, Bodhi and Anga. Bodhi, awakening, enlightenment, comes from the root bud, which means to wake up, to be aware of what is going on within and all around you. A Buddha is one who is awakened. Anga means limb. Sapta Bodhyanga can also be translated as the seven limbs or factors of enlightenment. After sitting in meditation at the foot of a ficus religiosa, known by Buddhists as the Bodhi tree, when the morning star arose, the Buddha realized enlightenment and said, "How amazing that all living beings have the basic nature of awakening, yet they don't know it. So they drift on the ocean of great suffering lifetime after lifetime." It means that the potentialities of the seven factors of awakening are already in us, but we don't know it. It is said that the Buddha was reluctant at first to share the insight he experienced under the Bodhi tree. Only after continuing his meditation did he realize that many beings would benefit if he offered concrete ways to help them wake up. The seven factors of awakening offer a description of both the characteristics of awakening as well as a path to awakening. Imagine a tree with seven large limbs, each representing one factor of awakening. Every year, each of these branches grows longer and sends out new shoots with new leaves. Enlightenment is growing all the time. It is not something that happens once and is then complete. It is reassuring that the Buddha regarded joy and ease among these seven elements. The first and main factor of awakening, the first limb of the Bodhi tree, is mindfulness, Smriti. Smriti literally means remembering, not forgetting where we are, what we are doing, and who we are with. Mindfulness always arises in the context of a relationship with ourselves, other people, or things. It is not something we keep in our pocket and take out when we need it. When we see a friend on the street and recognize her, we have not taken recognition out of our pocket. It arose in the context of the situation. Our breathing, walking, movements, feelings, and the phenomena around us are all parts of the relationship in which mindfulness arises. With training, every time we breathe in and out, mindfulness will be there, so that our breathing becomes a cause and condition for the arising of mindfulness. You might think, "I am the cause for mindfulness being present." But if you look around, you will never find an I. The telephones ring, the clocks chime, your teacher, and your sangha can be favorable causes for mindfulness being present. Imagine yourself doing walking meditation on a beach when suddenly the thought arises, "Do I have enough money in the bank?" If you return your awareness to your feet making contact with the sand, that is enough to bring you back to the present moment. You can do this because you have practiced walking meditation before. But it is your feet and not I that remind you to be present. In the Discourse on the Four Establishments of Mindfulness, the Buddha asks, "If you practice the four establishments of mindfulness, how long will it take to become enlightened?" First, he answers, 7 years. But then he says, "It can be as short as half a month." It means that awakening is always available. It only needs favorable conditions. The sun is there even when it is behind the clouds. The Buddha said, "By practicing the four establishments of mindfulness, you will realize the seven factors of awakening." Investigation of phenomena, Dharma Pravichaya, is the second factor of awakening. We humans love to investigate things. Often, we want the results of our investigations to fit a certain mold or prove a certain theory. But at times, we are open and allow things simply to reveal themselves. In the latter case, our knowledge and our boundaries expand. When we want to investigate the bud on the branch of the tree, we might ask, "Where have you come from? Where are you going? Are you really that small?" The bud might reply, "I will grow into a leaf, green in the summer, orange in the fall. Then I will fall to the earth, and in 2 years, I'll become a part of the earth. I am really not small. I'm as large as the earth." With mindfulness, investigation takes us deeply into life and into reality. The third factor of awakening is virya, which means energy, effort, diligence, or perseverance. Energy comes from many sources. Sometimes just thinking about what we might gain in the future gives us energy. In Buddhism, the sources of our energy are mindfulness, investigation, and faith in the practice. When we look deeply, we see that life is a miracle beyond our comprehension. But for many young people today, life is meaningless. Many thousands of young people commit suicide every year. In some countries, more young people die from suicide than from traffic accidents. We need to help young people cultivate the life energy that comes from experiencing the wonders of life. We need to help their lives have meaning. Even if we are in pain, if we can see meaning in our life, we will have energy and joy. Energy is not the result of good health alone, or the wish to achieve some goal, material or spiritual. It is a result of feeling some meaning to our life. Making an effort at the wrong time or place dissipates our energy. Sitting in meditation for lengthy periods before we have developed good concentration might cause us to dislike meditation and even to stop sitting altogether. When Siddhartha practiced meditation under the Bodhi tree, his concentration was already highly developed. When Kashyapa told Ananda that Ananda would not be invited to attend the first council of the Buddha's disciples because he did not have a high enough degree of awakening, Ananda sat in meditation all night, and by dawn he realized the fruit of arhatship, the transformation of all afflictions. When Ananda arrived at the council, Kashyapa and the others recognized that he had had a breakthrough. His shining presence was proof enough. The fourth factor of awakening is ease, prashrabdi. Diligence is always accompanied by ease. In the so-called third world, one often feels more ease than in the overdeveloped countries of the first world. Here, everyone is under enormous pressure, and people need stress reduction programs. Their stress comes from constant thinking and worrying and from their lifestyles. We have to learn ways to bring our energy from our head down to our abdomen. At least once every 15 minutes, we need to practice letting go. When we are sick, we stay in bed and do nothing. Often we don't even eat or drink. All of our energy is toward healing. We need to practice resting even when we are not sick. Sitting meditation, walking meditation, and mindful eating are good opportunities for resting. When you feel agitated, if you are able to go to a park or a garden, it is an opportunity for rest. If you walk slowly and remember to take it easy, if you are able to sit and do nothing from time to time, you can rest deeply and enter a state of true ease. The fifth factor of awakening is joy, priti. Joy goes with happiness, sukha. But there are differences. When you are thirsty and a glass of water is being served to you, that is joy. When you are actually able to drink the water, that is happiness. It is possible to develop joy in your mind, even when your body is not well. This will, in turn, help your body. Joy comes from touching things that are refreshing and beautiful, within and outside of ourselves. Usually, we touch only what's wrong. If we can expand our vision and also see what is right, this wider picture always brings joy. The sixth factor of awakening is concentration, samadhi. Sam means together, a is bringing to a certain place, and D is the energy of the mind. We collect the energy of our mind and direct it toward an object. With concentration, our mind is one-pointed and still, and quite naturally, it stays focused on one object. To have mindfulness, we need concentration. Once mindfulness is developed, concentration, in turn, becomes stronger. Concentration is not wholesome in itself. A thief needs concentration to break into a house. The object of our concentration is what makes it beneficial or not. If you use meditative concentration to run away from reality, that is not beneficial. Even before the time of the Buddha, many meditators practiced concentration to remove themselves from the world. Practicing this kind of concentration, the Buddha was not able to liberate himself from suffering. So he learned to use his concentration to shine light upon his suffering, and he was able to go deeply into life and develop understanding, compassion, and liberation. The seventh factor of awakening is equanimity, or letting go, upeksha. Equanimity is an aspect of true love. It is far from indifference. Practicing equanimity, we love everyone equally. In the Kakachupama Sutta, example of the saw, the Buddha says, "Even if robbers cut your limbs off with a saw, if anger arises in you, you are not a follower of my teachings. To be a disciple of the Buddha, your heart must bear no hatred. You must utter no unkind words. You must remain compassionate, with no hostility or ill will." As a young monk, I memorized these words and even put them to music. This teaching touches our most noble intention, but it is the opposite of our strong habit energies. To transform these habit energies and realize our noblest intention, the Buddha and the Venerable Shariputra taught us, 1. To practice equanimity in the face of harsh words, 2. To learn not to feel annoyance, bitterness, or dejection, and 3. Not to feel elated when praised, because we know that any praise is not for us as an individual, but for many beings, including our parents, teachers, friends, and all forms of life. In The Greater Discourse on the Example of the Elephant's Footprint, Shariputra shows the way to meditate on the four great elements in order to practice equanimity. When we meditate on the elements of earth, water, fire, and air inside and outside our bodies, we see that we and they are the same. When we transcend our idea of a separate self, our love will contain equanimity, knowing that we and others are truly the same. These seven factors are limbs of the same tree. If mindfulness is developed and maintained, the investigation of phenomena will meet with success. Joy and ease are wonderful feelings nourished by diligence. Concentration gives rise to understanding. When understanding is there, we go beyond comparing, discriminating, and reacting, and realize letting go. Those who arrive at letting go have the bud of a half smile, which proves compassion as well as understanding. The seven factors of awakening, if practiced diligently, lead to true understanding and emancipation. The Buddha said that the four immeasurable minds of love practiced with the seven factors of awakening bring complete, perfect enlightenment. The seven factors of awakening are, therefore, the practice of love. Chapter 27. The 12 links of interdependent co-arising. The 12 links of interdependent co-arising, pratitya samutpada, literally, independence, things rise up, is a deep and wonderful teaching, the foundation of all of Buddhist study and practice. Pratitya samutpada is sometimes called the teaching of cause and effect, but that can be misleading, because we usually think of cause and effect as separate entities, with cause always preceding effect, and one cause leading to one effect. According to the teaching of interdependent co-arising, cause and effect co-arise, samutpada, and everything is a result of multiple causes and conditions. The egg is in the chicken, and the chicken is in the egg. Chicken and egg arise in mutual dependence. Neither is independent. Interdependent co-arising goes beyond our concepts of space and time. The one contains the all. The Chinese character for cause has the character great inside of a rectangle. Cause is great, yet at the same time limited. The Buddha expressed interdependent co-arising very simply. This is because that is. This is not because that is not. This comes to be because that comes to be. This ceases to be because that ceases to be. These sentences occur hundreds of times in the discourses of both the northern and southern transmissions. They are the Buddhist genesis. I would like to add this sentence. This is like this because that is like that. In the sutras, this image is given. Three cut reeds can stand only by leaning on one another. If you take one away, the other two will fall. For a table to exist, we need wood, a carpenter, time, skillfulness, and many other causes. And each of these causes needs other causes to be. The wood needs the forest, the sunshine, the rain, and so on. The carpenter needs his parents, breakfast, fresh air, and so on. And each of those things, in turn, has to be brought about by other conditions. If we continue to look in this way, we'll see that nothing has been left out. Everything in the cosmos has come together to bring us this table. Looking deeply at the sunshine, the leaves of the tree, and the clouds, we can see the table. The one can be seen in the all, and the all can be seen in the one. One cause is never enough to bring about an effect. A cause must, at the same time, be an effect. And every effect must also be the cause of something else. Cause and effect inter are. The idea of a first or only cause, something that does not itself need a cause, cannot be applied. After the Buddha passed away, many schools of Buddhism began to describe interdependent co-arising more analytically. In the Visuddhimagga, Path of Purification, of the Theravada school, Buddhaghosa listed 24 kinds of conditions, Pali, Paccaya, the necessary and sufficient conditions for something to arise. 1. Root cause. 2. Object. 3. Predominance. 4. Priority. 5. Continuity. 6. Co-nascence. 7. Mutuality. 8. Support. 9. Decisive support. 10. Pre-nascence. 11. Post-nascence. A cause can be born after the effect. 12. Repetition. 13. Karma. 14. Karma result. 15. Nutriment. 16. Faculty. 17. Dhyana. 18. Path. 19. Association. 20. Dissociation. 21. Presence. 22. Absence. 23. Disappearance. And 24. Non-disappearance. In the Sarvastivada school, 4 kinds of conditions, pratyaya, and 6 kinds of causes were taught. And this later became part of the teachings of the Vijnanavada school of Buddhist psychology. According to this analysis, all 4 kinds of conditions must be present for everything that exists. The first of the 4 kinds of conditions is the cause condition, seed condition, or root condition, hetu pratyaya, just as the seed is the cause condition of the flower. There are said to be 6 kinds of cause conditions. 1. Motivating or creative force, karana hetu. Each conditioned dharma is the general cause for all things except itself. It is a co-present cause, offering no obstacles, because no dharma constitutes an obstacle to the arising of dharmas prone to arising. This condition has the function of empowering and not restricting. 2. Concurrent condition, sahabhu hetu. Sometimes two root conditions need to be present at the same time. If we draw a line, AB, A and B both have to be there. The same is true of lamp and lamplight. All pairs of opposites are like that. One cannot be present without the other. Above and below come into existence at the same time, as do the ideas being and non-being. These coexistent dharmas mutually condition one another. 3. Seed condition of the same kind, sabhaga hetu. Similars cause similars. Rice produces rice. Wholesome causes bring about wholesome effects. Faith and joy, for example, make a stable practice possible. And unwholesome causes bring about unwholesome effects. 4. Associated condition, samprayukta hetu. A wholesome and an unwholesome seed support each other in giving rise to something. This is called association or correspondence, and it applies only to mental events. Someone gives money to his church because he feels guilty about the wrong livelihood that has allowed him to make the money. The seed of guilt due to wrong livelihood is unwholesome. Giving is wholesome. The result is that the elders of the church tell him that they want him to transform his livelihood more than they want his money. This will hurt his pride, but can lead to much happiness in the future and can help alleviate his guilt. 5. Universal condition, sarvatraga hetu. The cause is present everywhere, in every part of our body, as well as throughout the universe. The six elements of earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness are examples of universal conditions. 6. Ripening condition, vipaka hetu. In our store consciousness, not everything ripens at the same time. When we bring home bananas, some ripen before the others. When we hear a dharma talk, some of the seeds sown ripen right away, while others might take many years. A seed of one kind can also transform and ripen into something different. At first, an orange is a blossom. Then it is something green and sour. And later, it ripens into a sweet fruit. A seed of love can ripen as a seed of anger. When we begin our sitting meditation, we may feel confined and agitated. After a while, our meditation may ripen into something quite relaxing and enjoyable. The second kind of condition, according to the Sarvastiva Deens, is called condition for development, adipati pratyaya. This can help certain seeds develop or can obstruct their development. Everyone has a seed of faith or confidence, for example. If you have friends who water this seed in you, it will grow strong. But if you meet only favorable conditions, you will not realize how precious this seed is. Obstacles along the path can help our determination and compassion grow. Obstacles teach us about our strengths and weaknesses so that we can know ourselves better and see in which direction we truly wish to go. One could say that the Buddha's practice of austerity was unfavorable to the development of his path. But if he had not undertaken those practices and failed in them, he would not have learned and later taught the middle way. When your intention is strong, unfavorable conditions will not dishearten you. In difficult moments, you will stick to your friends, fortify your convictions, and not give up. The third kind of condition is the condition of continuity, samanantra pratyaya. For something to exist, there needs to be a continuous succession, moment after moment. For our practice to develop, we need to practice every day. Walking meditation, listening to Dharma teachings, practicing mindfulness of the four foundations in all our activities, staying with the same Sangha, and practicing the same teachings. If we put a frog on a plate, it will jump right off. If you do not practice steadily, you will be like a frog on a plate. But when you decide to stay in one place until your practice fully develops, we can say that you have reached the state of froglessness and have begun to practice continuity. The fourth kind of condition is object as condition, alambana pratyaya. If there is no object, there cannot be a subject. For us to have confidence, there has to be an object of our confidence. When we feel despair about something. Our idea of the future, our idea of happiness, or our idea of life. When we are angry, we have to be angry at someone or something. According to the Buddha, all phenomena are objects of mind. When we perceive the image or sign of any phenomenon, we know that the object of our perception resides within our own consciousness. Can we live in a way that helps us see the causes that are present in the effects and the effects that are present in the causes? When we see this way, we begin to have insight into interdependent co-arising, and this is right view. In early Buddhism, we speak of interdependent co-arising. In later Buddhism, we use the words interbeing and interpenetration. The terminology is different, but the meaning is the same. After hearing the Buddha teach about interdependent co-arising, Ananda said, "Venerable Lord, the teaching of interdependent co-arising appears to be deep and subtle, but I find it quite simple." The Buddha replied, "Do not say that, Ananda. The teaching of interdependent co-arising is indeed deep and subtle. Anyone who is able to see the nature of interdependent co-arising is able to see the Buddha. Once you can see into the nature of interdependent co-arising, you will be guided by your insight and you will not lose your practice. The teaching of impermanence is implicit in the teaching of interdependent co-arising. How could we live if we were not nourished by multiple causes and conditions? The conditions that make it possible for us to exist and to change come from what is not us. When we understand impermanence and non-self, we understand interdependent co-arising. In this gatha, Nagarjuna links interdependent co-arising with emptiness. All phenomena that arise interdependently, I say that they are empty. Words come to an end because their message is false. Words come to an end because there is a middle way. All teachings of Buddhism are based on interdependent co-arising. If a teaching is not in accord with interdependent co-arising, it is not a teaching of the Buddha. When you have grasped interdependent co-arising, you bring that insight to shine on the three baskets, Tripitaka, of the teachings. The three baskets are sutras, teachings of the Buddha, Vinaya, rules of conduct, and Abhidharma, systemized presentations of the teachings. Interdependent co-arising allows you to see the Buddha, and the two truths allow you to hear the Buddha. When you are able to see and hear the Buddha, you will not lose your way as you traverse the ocean of his teachings. The Buddha said that there are 12 links, nidanas, in the chain of interdependent co-arising. The earliest discourse in which the Buddha talked about a chain of causes was the Mahanidana Sutta, Digha Nikaya 15, although in that discourse only 9 links are given. In later teachings, the list was expanded to 12. The first is ignorance, avidya. Vidya means seeing, understanding, or light. Avidya means the lack of light, the lack of understanding, or blindness. Although ignorance is usually listed as the first link, it does not mean that ignorance is a first cause. It is also possible to begin the list with old age and death. The second link is volitional action, samskara, also translated as formations, impulses, motivating energy, karma formations, or the will to cling to being. when we have a lack of understanding, anger, irritation, or hatred can arise. The third link is consciousness, vijnana. Consciousness here means the whole of consciousness, individual and collective, mind consciousness and store consciousness, subject and object. And consciousness here is filled with unwholesome and erroneous tendencies connected with ignorance that are of the nature to bring about suffering. The fourth link is mind, body, or name and form, nama rupa. Name, nama, means the mental element, and form, rupa, means the physical element of our being. Both mind and body are objects of our consciousness. When we look at our hand, it is an object of our consciousness. When we touch our anger, sadness, or happiness, these are also objects of our consciousness. The fifth link is the six ayatanas, which are the six sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, accompanied by their objects, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile objects, and objects of mind. These six ayatanas do not exist separately from mind, body, the fourth link, but are listed separately to help us see them more clearly. When a sense organ comes into contact, the sixth link, with a sense object, there has to be sense consciousness, which lies within the third link. We are beginning to see how the 12 links inter are, how each link contains all the other links. The sixth link is the contact, sparsha, between sense organ, sense object, and sense consciousness. When eyes and form, ears and sound, nose and smell, tongue and taste, body and touch, and mind and object of mind come into contact, sense consciousness is born. Contact is a basis for feelings. It is a universal mental formation present in every mental formation. The seventh link is feelings, vedana, which can be pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, or mixed. When a feeling is pleasant, we may become attached, the ninth link. The eighth link is craving, trishna, or desire. Craving is followed by grasping. The ninth link is grasping, or attachment, upadana. It means we are caught in the thralls of the object. The tenth link is coming to be, bhava, being or becoming. Because we desire something, it comes to be. We have to look deeply to know what we really want. The 11th link is birth, jati. The 12th link is old age, or decay, and death, jaramarana. Ignorance conditions volitional actions. Volitional actions condition consciousness. Consciousness conditions mind, body, and so on. As soon as ignorance is present, all the other links, volitional actions, consciousness, mind, body, and so on, are already there. Each link contains all the other links. Because there is ignorance, there are volitional actions. Because there are volitional actions, there is consciousness. Because there is consciousness, there is mind, body, and so on. In the five aggregates, there is nothing that we can call a self. Ignorance is the inability to see this truth. Consciousness, mind, body, the six senses, and their objects, contact and feeling, are the effect of ignorance and volitional actions. Because of craving, grasping, and coming to be, there will be birth and death, which means the continuation of this wheel, or chain, again and again. When artists illustrate the 12 links of interdependent co-arising, they often draw a blind woman to represent ignorance, a man gathering fruit in the jungle, or a potter at work to illustrate volitional actions, a restless monkey grasping this and that for consciousness, a boat to represent mind-body, a house with many windows for the six senses and their objects, a man and a woman close to each other to represent contact, a man pierced by an arrow for feeling, a man drinking wine for craving or thirst, a man and a woman in sexual union, or a man picking fruit from a tree to represent attachment or grasping, a pregnant woman for coming to be, a woman giving birth for birth, and an old woman leaning on a stick, or a man carrying a corpse on his back or his shoulder for old age and death. Another way that artists sometimes depict the 12 links is to draw an embryo in the womb for consciousness, the child just before birth for mind-body, the child from 1 to 2 years old, when his or her life is dominated by touching, for the six senses and their objects, the same child from 3 to 5 years old for contact, and an adult for desire or attachment. There do not have to be exactly 12 links. In the Abhidharma texts of the Sarvastivada school, it says that you can teach 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 up to 12 links. There is a collection, basket of Buddhist teachings called Abhidharma, Super Dharma. These are extended explanations of the teachings the Buddha gave. At first, in order to lend credence to their work, the authors of the Abhidharma tried to make these writings look like discourses of the Buddha. In the second stage, these writings were accepted as independent and given the name Abhidharma. During the third stage, as Abhidharma developed, it became more and more analytical. This fine and detailed analysis is often dry and difficult to understand. Sometimes it is analysis just for the sake of analysis, rather than guidance for the practice to help us transform our suffering. The fourth and final stage of Abhidharma was to shorten and simplify the long, detailed analyses so that they became easier to understand. The one link belongs to the unconditioned realm, asamskrita. The two links are cause and effect. The three links are past, present, and future. The four links are ignorance, volitional actions, birth, and old age and death. The five links are craving, grasping, coming to be, birth, and old age and death. The six links are past cause, present cause, future cause, past result, present result, and future result. Because ignorance and volitional actions exist in consciousness, and the six ayatanas exist in name and form, in the Mahanidana Sutta, the Buddha lists only 9 links. At other times, Buddha taught 10 links, omitting ignorance and volitional actions. Sometimes, when the Buddha taught interdependent co-arising, he began with old age and death and the suffering that accompanies them. In the sutras that do not include ignorance and volitional actions as links, the Buddha ends by saying that mind-body is conditioned by consciousness, and consciousness is conditioned by mind-body. The Buddha never wanted us to understand the 12 links in a linear way, that there is a line going from ignorance to old age and death, or that there are exactly and only 12 links. Not only does ignorance give rise to volitional actions, but volitional actions also give rise to ignorance. Each link in the chain of interdependent co-arising is both a cause and an effect of all the other links in the chain. The 12 links inter are. In the tendency to see the teachings of the Buddha as an explanation of how things are, rather than as a support and guide to the practice, the 12 links have been misunderstood in many ways. One way has been to see them as a way to explain why there is birth and death. The Buddha usually began the 12 links with old age and death to help us get in touch with suffering and find its roots. This is closely linked to the teachings and practice of the Four Noble Truths. It was after the lifetime of the Buddha that teachers more often than not began with ignorance to help prove why there is birth and death. Ignorance became a kind of first cause, even though the Buddha always taught that no first cause can be found. If ignorance exists, it is because there are causes that give rise to and deepen ignorance. the Buddha was not a philosopher trying to explain the universe. He was a spiritual guide who wanted to help us put an end to our suffering. Two other theories based on the 12 links evolved after the lifetime of the Buddha. One was called the three times, and the other the two levels of cause and effect. According to these theories, ignorance and volitional actions belong to the past. Birth and old age and death belong to the future. And all the other links from consciousness to coming to be belong to the present. It is true that ignorance and volitional actions existed before we were born, but they also exist in the present. They are contained within all the other links, which include the so-called links of the present and future. Regarding the two levels of cause and effect, at the first level, ignorance and volitional actions are said to be causes, and consciousness, mind-body, the six ayatanas, and contact are said to be effects. At the second level, feelings, craving, grasping, and coming to be in this life lead to birth and old age and death in a future life. Theories like these are not entirely inaccurate, but we have to be able to go beyond them. All commentaries and theories contain some misunderstanding, but we can still feel gratitude to these commentators and theorists for taking the teachings in a new direction to help people transform, while basically conforming to teachings of the Buddha. When we hear from commentators that some links are causes, namely ignorance and volitional actions, and others are effects, namely birth and old age and death, we know that this is not consistent with the Buddha's teaching that everything is both a cause and an effect. To think that ignorance gives rise to volitional actions, which later give rise to consciousness, which then gives rise to mind-body, would be a dangerous oversimplification. When the Buddha said, ignorance conditions volitional actions, he meant that there is a relationship of cause and effect between ignorance and volitional actions. Ignorance nourishes volitional actions, but volitional actions also nourish ignorance. Ignorance activates consciousness by producing feelings of discomfort, craving, boredom, intention, and aspiration. So these feelings are called volitional actions. Once these feelings are active in consciousness, they make ignorance stronger. The tree gives rise to and nourishes its leaves, but the leaves also nourish the tree. Leaves are not just the children of the tree, they are also the mother of the tree. Because of the leaves, the tree is able to grow. Every leaf is a factory synthesizing sunshine to nourish the tree. The interbeing of leaf and tree is parallel to the interbeing of the 12 links of interdependent co-arising. We say that ignorance conditions volitional actions, but ignorance also conditions consciousness, both through volitional actions and directly. Ignorance conditions mind-body as well. If there were no ignorance in mind-body, mind-body would be different. Our six organs and the six objects of these organs also contain ignorance. My perception of the flower is based on my eyes and on the form of the flower. As soon as my perception becomes caught in the sign flower, ignorance is there. Therefore, ignorance is present in contact, and it is also present in feelings, craving, grasping, coming to be, birth, and old age and death. Ignorance is not just in the past. It is present now in each of our cells and each of our mental formations. If there were no ignorance, we would not become attached to things. If there were no ignorance, we would not grasp the objects of our attachment. If there were no ignorance, the suffering that is manifesting right now would not be there. Our practice is to identify ignorance when it is present. Grasping is in volitional actions, feelings, coming to be, birth, and old age and death. Our infatuations, our running away from this or toward that, and our intentions can be seen in all the other links. Every link conditions every other link and is conditioned by them. With this understanding, we can abandon the idea of a sequential chain of causation and enter deeply the practice of the 12 links of interdependent co-arising. Although it says in the sutra that consciousness brings about mind-body, that mind-body brings about the six ayatanas, and so on, we must understand this as a way of speaking and nothing more. We have to see the 12 links in a broad, open way. Consider, for example, craving as the fruit of feeling. Sometimes a feeling does not lead to craving, but to aversion. Sometimes the feeling is not accompanied by ignorance, but by understanding, lucidity, or loving kindness, and the outcome will not be craving or aversion. To say that feeling brings about craving is not precise enough. Feeling with attachment and ignorance brings about craving. We must link each of the 12 links with all the other links. This is what the Heart Sutra means when it tells us no interdependent co-arising. The 12 links are empty because each of them would not exist without all the others. Feeling cannot be without craving, grasping, coming to be, birth, old age and death, ignorance, volitional actions, and so on. In each of the 12 links, we see the presence of the other 11. Feeling can lead to craving, non-craving, or equanimity. Ignorance is avidya, the lack of light. Vidya is understanding or wisdom. The presence of light means the absence of darkness. The presence of day means the absence of night. The presence of ignorance means the absence of understanding. The Buddha said, "When ignorance comes to an end, understanding arises." Ignorance leads to volitional actions, the will to live. When you are angry, you want to do something. But does understanding lead to the will to die? No, it leads to the will to live also. In understanding, there is loving kindness and compassion. And when you are compassionate, loving, and understanding, you want to do something to help alleviate the suffering. Anger, hatred, and ignorance are forms of energy. Understanding and compassion are also forms of energy. On one side, there are actions for grasping things or satisfying our desires. On the other side is the volition to be present in order to help alleviate suffering. That is the intention of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and all people of goodwill. They have love, understanding, and therefore the willingness to be present amidst the suffering in order to bring relief, comfort, and joy. The expression volitional action or will to live has to be understood in these two ways. One, to live in order to experience pleasure for oneself alone or to oppress others, or two, to be present in order to help. Social workers do not go into slum areas because they want power or riches. They go because they want to serve, to fulfill their need of loving. That is also a volitional action. When the Buddha looks at a flower, he knows that the flower is his own consciousness. There is nothing wrong in having consciousness. It is only when we water unwholesome seeds, ignorance, hatred, jealousy, anxiety, that consciousness causes suffering to ourselves and others. Consciousness is the base for distinguishing, planning, helping, and doing good work. That kind of consciousness is present in the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas. The Buddha said, "How lovely is the city of Vaishali." He said, "Ananda, don't you think that the rice fields are lovely? Shall we go into town and share the Dharma?" These statements are based on lucid consciousness, consciousness full of understanding, care, and love. We have to water the seeds of our own lucid consciousness. There is ignorance in us, but there is also wisdom. The seed of awakening is also present in each link. In compost, there are flowers, and in flowers, there is compost. If we know how to make compost, it will quickly become flowers. If we know how to look after flowers, they will last longer. Don't think there is only ignorance in the 12 links. There is also the seed of awakened wisdom. If you throw away the 12 links, you will not have the means to arrive at peace and joy. Don't throw away your ignorance, volitional actions, or consciousness. Transform them into understanding and other wonderful attributes. As you can see, there is also a positive side to the 12 links, although Buddhist teachers since the time of the Buddha seem to have overlooked this. We need to find words to describe the interdependent co-arising of positive states of mind and body, and not just of negative states. The Buddha taught that when ignorance ends, there is clear understanding. He didn't say that when ignorance ends, there is nothing. What does clear understanding condition? Clarity, the absence of ignorance, gives rise to the desire to act with love and compassion. This is called the great aspiration, Mahapranidhana, or mind of awakening, Bodhicitta, in Mahayana Buddhism. When you practice the Four Noble Truths, you see that you can liberate yourself and other beings, and you stop running away from and destroying yourself. The positive side of volitional actions is the motivating energy called the great aspiration that propels us toward the beautiful and the wholesome, rather than toward the hell realms. Just as volitional actions condition consciousness, the great aspiration conditions wisdom. When our ignorance has been transformed, what we have been calling consciousness becomes wisdom. Consciousness is described in the Vijnanavada schema in terms of 8 consciousnesses, and these are transformed into 4 wisdoms. When the seeds of awakening, love, and compassion in our store consciousness have been developed and matured, our store consciousness, Alaya Vijnana, is transformed and becomes the great mirror wisdom that reflects the reality of the cosmos. All the seeds that can become the great mirror wisdom are already present in our store consciousness. We only have to water them. Great mirror wisdom is the outcome of the vow to save beings as our volitional action. When we invoke the name of Avalokiteshvara, this is the willingness and capacity of being there, listening, responding to suffering, and helping beings. When we invoke the name of Samatabhadra, that is the willingness and capacity of acting mindfully and joyfully to serve others. When we invoke the name of Manjushri, that is the willingness and capacity of looking deeply, understanding, and being the eyes of the world. With this kind of will, guided by clear understanding, our consciousness becomes an instrument of engagement in the world. The presence of a Buddha is an example of this kind of volitional action, an offering of consciousness of what is going on, the willingness to help, and knowing what to do and how to do it in order to alleviate the suffering in the world. That consciousness manifests in mind-body, just as it does for everyone else. But the quality of the Buddha's mind-body is different from ours, and we can see and feel that. We have to learn the ways to use our consciousness as a tool of transformation. Our 6 sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, can contribute toward the arising of great mirror wisdom. We see that the Buddha also has 6 senses that enter into contact with 6 sense objects. But he knows how to guard his senses so that more internal knots will not be tied. The Buddha uses his 6 senses skillfully and realizes wonderful things. The first 5 consciousnesses become the wisdom of wonderful realization. We can use these 5 consciousnesses to serve others. Mind consciousness, upon emancipation, becomes the wonderful observation wisdom, wisdom that can see things as they are. When the 6 senses and their objects make contact, this contact gives rise to a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling. When a bodhisattva sees a child suffering, she knows how it feels to suffer, and she also has an unpleasant feeling. But because of that suffering, concern and compassion arise in her, and she is determined to act. Bodhisattvas suffer like the rest of us, but in a bodhisattva, feelings do not give rise to craving or aversion. They give rise to concern, the desire and the willingness to stay in the midst of suffering and confusion, and to act. When a bodhisattva sees a beautiful flower, she recognizes that the flower is beautiful, but she also sees the nature of impermanence in the flower. That is why there is no attachment. She has a pleasant feeling, but it does not create an internal formation. Emancipation does not mean that she suppresses all feelings. When she comes into contact with hot water, she knows it is hot. Feelings are normal. In fact, these feelings help her dwell in happiness. Not the kind of happiness that is subject to sorrow and anxiety, but the kind of happiness that nourishes. When you practice breathing, smiling, being touched by the air and the water, that kind of happiness does not create suffering in you. It helps you be strong and sane, able to go further on your way toward realization. Buddhas, bodhisattvas, and many others have the capacity of enjoying a pleasant feeling, the kind of feeling that is healing and rejuvenating without becoming attached. The feeling that we have when we see people oppressed or starving can give rise in us to concern, compassion, and the willingness to act with equanimity, not with attachment. The wisdom of equality comes from the seventh consciousness, manas. Manas is the number one discriminator. It says, "This is me. This is mine. This is not mine." That is manas' specialty. We have to keep this consciousness so that it can become the wisdom of equality. Our consciousness has to be transformed and not thrown away. It is the same with the five aggregates. We don't say, "The five aggregates are suffering," and throw them away. If we do, there will be nothing left. No nirvana, no peace, and no joy. We need an intelligent policy for taking care of our garbage. Wonderful observation wisdom transforms manas into the wisdom of equality. We are one. We are equal. I may think that you are my enemy, but while touching the ultimate dimension, I see that you and I are one. Sometimes we only need to touch the earth once, and the wisdom of equality appears right in the heart of our manas consciousness. Wonderful observation wisdom takes the place of the sixth consciousness, mind consciousness. Before the disappearance of ignorance, the sixth consciousness gives rise to many wrong perceptions, like seeing a rope as a snake, and a lot of suffering. Thanks to transformation at the base, the store consciousness becoming great mirror wisdom, the sixth consciousness can be transformed into wonderful observation wisdom. The fourth wisdom, great mirror wisdom, brings about miracles. In the past, our eye consciousness made us infatuated or put us in the dark. Now, with our eyes open, we can see the Dharmakaya, the teaching body of the Buddha. When our mind is clear like a calm river, the sixth consciousness is wonderful observation wisdom, and our store consciousness is great mirror wisdom. Clear understanding conditions the great aspiration and wisdom. If consciousness conditions mind, body, what does wisdom condition? We have body and mind, bodhisattvas have body and mind, and the Buddha has a body and a mind. We should not throw away our body and mind in order to experience liberation. We use the term nirmanakaya, transformation body, to describe the bright side of mind, body. In this body and mind, there is no longer ignorance, volitional actions, or wrong consciousness. The function of this body and mind is to awaken and liberate living beings. Love and compassion can manifest in hundreds of thousands of different forms. Avalokiteshvara can appear as a child, a politician, or as a beautiful woman with a voice as clear as the song of the Kalavinka bird, the Indian cuckoo. A bodhisattva can be beautiful or ugly, poor or rich, healthy or sick. Any mind-body that has the function to bring about love, understanding, and happiness is the transformation body of the Buddha. if mind-body conditions consciousness on one side, and the six ayatanas on the other, and the transformation body conditions wisdom on one side, what does it condition on the other? We can say that it conditions the result body, Sambhogakaya, which is the fruit of deep practice that is said to be marked by 32 signs. Every body is a collection of the five aggregates and has mental and physiological components, name and form. In the case of the Sambhogakaya, the physiology and the psychology contain clarity, bodhicitta, and the four wisdoms as means for teaching the path and do not contain ignorance. Even within a Buddha's mind body, there is contact. The Buddha drinks water and wears warm clothes. If he is not protected from the cold, he will become ill. When the six sense organs of the Buddha are in contact with the six sense objects, the Buddha has feeling. But that feeling does not lead to grasping and attachment. Contact in a Buddha, Sambhogakaya, is purified and mindful, and feelings are the same. The Sambhogakaya is wholly protected because he practices guarding his six sense organs and their objects. We can also practice shining the light of mindfulness on the contacts that take place between our sense organs and sense objects. If we do not guard these contacts, even if we sit in a meditation hall for 12 hours a day, we are not practicing. When we walk, talk, eat, or whatever we do, if we guard our senses, the contacts that take place between our sense organs and sense objects will be clear and calm. As far as the positive side of the 12 links is concerned, contact becomes mindfulness of contact, and feeling becomes mindfulness of feeling. Every contact of the senses and every feeling has clarity and calmness. When feelings and contact are protected, they lead not to craving, but to love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, the four immeasurable minds. With mindfulness, we see feelings as painful, pleasant, or neutral. When we see people suffering or in pain, or when we see them enjoying themselves in a foolish way, a feeling in us gives rise to the energy of loving kindness, the desire and the capacity to offer real joy. And this leads to the energy of compassion, the desire and the capacity to help living beings put an end to their suffering. This energy gives rise to joy in us, and we are able to share our joy with others. It also gives rise to equanimity, not taking sides or getting carried away by the images and sounds brought to us through contact and feelings. Equanimity does not mean indifference. We see the ones we love and the ones we hate equally, and try our best to make both of them happy. We accept the flowers and the garbage with neither attachment nor aversion. We treat both with respect. Equanimity means to let go, not to abandon. Abandoning causes suffering. When we are not attached, we are able to let go. The four immeasurable minds are the basis for freedom. When we are in touch with things by means of the mind of love, we do not run away or seek, and that is the basis of freedom. Aimlessness takes the place of grasping. When we have freedom, what seemed to be suffering becomes wondrous being. It can also be called the kingdom of God or the pure land. Someone who is free has the ability to establish a pure land, a place where people do not need to run. Wondrous being is beyond being and non-being. If a bodhisattva needs to manifest being, if he needs to be born in this world, he will be born in this world. There is still life, but he is not caught in ideas of being, non-being, birth, or death. Wondrous being is the equivalent to the coming to be of the conventional 12 links. Wondrous being is the basis for being born without getting caught in wrong ideas about birth and death. The leaf has the appearance of being born and dying, but it is not caught in either. The leaf falls to the earth without any idea of dying. and is born again by decomposing at the foot of the tree and nourishing the tree. The cloud has the appearance of dying in becoming rain, but it feels no sorrow or pain. There are people who suffer when they see a leaf die. In the age of Romanticism, there were young people who picked up fallen flower petals, buried them, wept, and wrote epitaphs. When a leaf is born, we can sing happy continuation. When a leaf falls, we can sing happy continuation. When we have awakened understanding, birth is a continuation and death is a continuation. Birth is an appearance and death is an appearance. People also appear to be born, grow old, and die. We study the 12 links of interdependent co-arising in order to diminish the element of ignorance in us and to increase the element of clarity. When our ignorance is diminished, craving, hatred, pride, doubt, and views are also diminished, and love, compassion, joy, and equanimity are increased. This happens in all 12 nidanas. After clarity, there is bodhicitta, the great aspiration. The key is the guarding of the six senses and mindfulness of feelings and contact. This is the place we can enter into the cycle and begin to transform it. In his first Dharma talk, the Buddha cautioned his disciples not to be attached to either bhava or abhava, being or non-being, because bhava and abhava are just constructs of the mind. Reality is somewhere in between. When we present the 12 links in the usual way, if we say there is no attachment, it means there will be no being, that we are aspiring to abhava. But this is exactly what the Buddha did not want. If you say that the purpose of the practice is to destroy being in order to arrive at non-being, this is entirely incorrect. With non-attachment, we see both being and non-being as creations of our mind, and we ride the wave of birth and death. We don't mind birth. We don't mind death. If we have to be born again to continue the work of helping, that is okay. We know that nothing is born and nothing can die. We have the wisdom of no birth and no death. We know that there is birth, old age, and death, but we also know that these are only waves on which bodhisattvas ride. Birth is okay, and death is okay, if we know that they are only concepts in our mind. Reality transcends both birth and death. In the 11th century in Vietnam, a monk asked his meditation master, "Where is the place beyond birth and death?" The master replied, "In the midst of birth and death." If you abandon birth and death in order to find nirvana, you will not find nirvana. Nirvana is in birth and death. Nirvana is birth and death. It depends on how you look at it. From one point of view, it is birth and death. From another, it is nirvana. Let us not present the teaching of the Buddha as an attempt to escape from life and go to nothingness or non-being. Bodhisattvas vowed to come back again and again to serve, not because of craving, but because of their concern and willingness to help. The practice of mindful living develops the same kind of wisdom, concern, and loving kindness in us, so we can serve. It is time for us to present the teaching of interdependent co-arising in a way that is easy and approachable for the people of our time. Those who teach the 12 links need to understand their positive side also. When we are motivated by our mind of love, all 12 links become brighter. 12 links. The two aspects of interdependent co-arising. 1. When conditioned by deluded mind, ignorance, avidya. When conditioned by true mind, clear understanding, vidya. 2. When conditioned by deluded mind, volitional actions, samskara. When conditioned by true mind, great aspiration, mahapranidhana. 3. when conditioned by deluded mind. Consciousness, vijnana. First five consciousnesses, anovijnana, manas, alayavijnana. When conditioned by true mind, four wisdoms. Wisdom of wonderful realization. Wonderful observation wisdom. Wisdom of equality. Great mirror wisdom. Four. When conditioned by deluded mind. Mind, body, nama rupa, nirmanakaya. When conditioned by true mind. Transformation body. Five. When conditioned by deluded mind, six sense organs and their objects, ayatanas. When conditioned by true mind, result body, sambhogakaya. Six. When conditioned by deluded mind, contact, sparsha. When conditioned by true mind, mindfulness of contact. Seven. When conditioned by deluded mind, feeling, vedana. When conditioned by true mind, mindfulness of feeling. Eight. When conditioned by deluded mind, craving, trishna. When conditioned by true mind, four immeasurable minds, brahmaviharas. Nine. When conditioned by deluded mind, grasping, upadana. When conditioned by true mind, freedom, apranihita. 10. When conditioned by deluded mind, coming to be, bhava. When conditioned by true mind, wondrous being. 11. When conditioned by deluded mind, birth, jati. When conditioned by true mind, wisdom of no birth. 12. When conditioned by deluded mind, old age and death, jaramarana. When conditioned by true mind, wisdom of no death. There is co-arising conditioned by deluded mind and co-arising conditioned by true mind. The world, society, and the individual have been formed by a cycle of conditions based on deluded mind. Naturally, in a world based on deluded mind, there is suffering and affliction. But when conditions are based on true mind, they reflect the wondrous nature of reality. Everything depends on our mind. Imagine 1,000 people whose minds are full of misperceptions, wrong views, envy, jealousy, and anger. If they come together, they will create a hell on earth. The surroundings they live in, their daily lives, and their relationships will all be hellish. If two people full of misunderstanding live together, they create a hell realm for each other. How much greater the hell of 1,000 people? To make hell into paradise, we only need to change the mind on which it is based. To change the minds of 1,000 people, it may be necessary to bring in some element from the outside, like a Dharma teacher or a group of people practicing the Dharma. Imagine 1,000 people who do not have wrong perceptions, anger, or jealousy, but who have love, understanding, and happiness. If these people come together and form a community, it will be paradise. The mind of the people is the basis of paradise. With your deluded mind, you make hell for yourself. With your true mind, you make paradise. If two people come together with true mind, they make a small paradise for themselves. If a third person wants to join them, they should be careful. Should we let him join us or not? If their paradise is solid, they can allow him to join. With two true minds, there is hope that one deluded mind can be gradually transformed. Later, there will be three true minds, and this small paradise will continue to grow. Many volumes have been written about the 12 links of interdependent co-arising based on deluded mind. We have to open a new door and teach the practice of the 12 links based on true mind in order to bring about a world of peace and joy.